quite ordinary European-American objects, shoes, coins and plates, appear to have been given new African-influenced, creolized, non-Christian meanings in their use as part of the burial practices of Philadelphia's First American Baptist Church, and at other burial grounds and religious sites used by both free and enslaved African-Americans in the 19th century and later. This paper considers these findings as material expressions of the integration of African magical and Christian religious beliefs and practices in the spiritual life of African Americans. In this paper, the author reviews the nature and apparent meanings of these objects, and then considers the implications of the transformation of these objects' meanings for the study of material culture more broadly. The author believes that these transformative uses are tied to issues of individual and community identity. Accordingly, the paper begins with a consideration of death and identity. The archaeology of cemeteries deals with the graves of individuals who as identities in the past included, but were not limited to membership of the communities in which they lived and worked. The graves of the working people of the past and of African Americans in particular are often anonymous in that we do not know the specific identity of the individual in the grave. Grave markers from some such cemeteries, if ever present, may have been of simple natural materials such as fieldstone, boulders, or were of impermanent materials that have not survived the elements, such as wooden crosses, or may have been removed through lack of respect and the desire to put land to more productive use. It's often the case that we only know that he or she was a member of a particular congregation or community. In the 1990s, there emerged a literature in the social sciences concerned with theories of the body and the body's central place in the formation and expression of social identity. Such studies have been influenced to a considerable degree, on the one hand, by Foucault's work that demonstrated that such apparently natural things as the mind and body are, in fact, socially constructed through a series of historically and culturally specific discourses in which social power is expressed. On the other hand, is a phenomenological perspective that emphasizes a materiality in which the human subject is the primary site for all perceptions and social action. For example, Featherstone discussed a performing self where appearance, gesture, and bodily demeanour become taken as expressions of the self. Schilling crystallised this and related positions in stating that there is a tendency for the body to become increasingly central to a person's sense of self-identity. Thus, body was seen as essentially equaling self. More recently, Joyce, in discussing the archaeology of the body, argue that phenomenological approaches that lead to a semiotic perspective of on the body are being replaced by analysis of the production and experience of lived bodies through the juxtaposition of traces of bodily practices, idealized representations, and the evidence of the effects of habitual gestures, postures, consumption practices, etc., on the corporal body. So that prior static conceptions of an archaeology of the body are being replaced by a dynamic view of the body as a site of lived experience, a social body, and a site of embodied agency. A subset of this writing is concerned specifically with death, dying, and identity. These are bodies in a state of crisis or transformation, in this context looking cross-culturally and even fictively, I think he means to fiction, one finds that the relationship between the body and the self is not so straightforward. There are live bodies without effective self-identity, and he gives the example of people in intensive care wards effectively locked in or without brain function. There are vampires and zombies that are not exactly dead or that may or may not have self, and finally there are selves without corporal presence, ancestors, ghosts, and various god or godless figures. The anthropological literature has long recognised that death and its attendant rituals are important events in which key values and beliefs are represented, often in overdetermined forms. For example, Durkheimian perspectives see transformative effects in the participation in rituals that take the personal and individual and make it social. Giddens suggested that in death's liminal quality, personal identity may be gathered, sifted, and recast, and that which is left unsaid or unexpressed, those identities that are lost, result in disturbing silences that resonate powerfully, particularly in societies that afford the continuity of individual biography a high priority. Bodies have individual personal histories that are part of a dynamic socio-cultural relations and particular historical processes. Religious beliefs, morals, and value systems themselves dynamic over time construe various relationships between individual bodies, communities, and broader social contexts. In the context of ritual burial practices, then, what we archaeologists encounter is not the body as self-identified or a site for individual agency, but rather the individual as understood, imagined, and or constructed by surviving family and community members. Self-identity, then, in this sense, is intersubjective and collective, much like Barthes' notion of ethnicity. It's not enough that one identifies oneself as a member of a particular group. One must also be recognised by others as a member of that group. Identity, then, in the context of burial, does not rely solely on the self as agent. In fact, it cannot. In death, the self becomes essentially powerless and must rely on others for identity and action. Thus, it's the individual and community identities are reconciled in the graveside, as they are nowhere else. The cemetery, then, as numerous studies of gravestones, for example, have argued, is a special venue for the expression of identity. African influence customs. While the author makes reference to a number of African-American cemetery sites, the bulk of data discussed here is derived from his continuing consideration of the first African Baptist church cemeteries in Philadelphia, one used between 1810 and 1822 at 10th Street, and one used between 1824 and around 1841 at 8th Street. The positioning and orientation of the burials in both cemeteries, except where disturbed, followed Western Christian conventions. That is, the deceased were laid supine on their backs with their hands together on their abdomen or at the sides of the body, with the head of the deceased to the west. This is the dominant practice at other African-American cemeteries in North America as well. All evidence of African-influenced customs considered here were found at the level of actual burial, either in or immediately outside the coffin. These practices included placement of a single coin in the coffin, usually near the head of the deceased, 2, the burial of a shoe on top of the coffin, and 3, the burial of a plate on the stomach of the deceased. Burial of coins. While the practice of placing coins on each of the eyes of the deceased is widely documented, it's observed in only 2 instances in First African Baptist Church cemeteries. In both of these cases, the burials had been disturbed during the redevelopment of the property, and the author believes the coins were placed at that point in time, inasmuch as the coins were found deeply in the eye sockets of the individual's skulls. More commonly, a single coin was found inside the coffin, nearly always near the head. The monetary offering may represent an association of death with a journey, perhaps to an African homeland, with the coin provided to pay for passage. The placement of similar monetary offerings is widely documented in West Africa, where it's generally associated with passage over the river of death to an afterlife. Single coins have been recovered from at least 11 other African-American burials in the American South, and there is a report of a coin-like metal disc recovered from an African grave in Montserrat. Pierced coins. Pierced coins and shiny objects are believed to have been worn to provide spiritual protection for the wearer. Davidson analysed 20 pierced coins recovered from the postbellum Freedman Cemetery in Texas and noted that pierced coins were not exclusively an indication of African belief systems, but have been widely found in Europe and especially the British Isles, where they date to the pre-Christian era. He argued that the ritual act of piercing the coin was the source of its spiritual power. None of the coins recovered from the first African Baptist church, however, were pierced. Burial of a shoe. In 6 cases at the First African Baptist Church cemeteries, the remains of a shoe were found placed on top of the coffin. Shoes can be seen as being required for a journey. While we may take shoes for granted in our post-industrial disposable economy, in the past shoes were a costly item of apparel, especially for the rural poor. The receipt of one's first pair of shoes, regardless of race, was often a special event that marked a stage in the passage from child to adult, and as such was especially remembered. Shoes are also associated with African-American folk beliefs concerning power over spirits or good luck. It's said that burial of a shoe under a full moon will keep the devil away. The association of shoes with spiritual protection may, however, have originated in Europe, for in southern England and parts of northern continental Europe, shoes were used as house charms from medieval times into the 19th century. There are apparently well over 1,000 documented cases of such charms. Over the course of their use, shoes take on the shape of the wearer's foot, and it's probably no coincidence that the bottom of the shoe is the sole. He puts in brackets, metaphor as pun, why not? Shoe house charms misdirected the devil and protected the inhabitants. Burial of a shoe under a full moon to keep the devil away suggests a similar effort to misdirect evil. Burial of a shoe with the deceased may represent putting the soul to rest with the body. Archaeological documentation of this practice seems to be limited to the 8th Street First African Baptist Church Cemetery and the Freedman Cemetery in Dallas, Texas. Burial of a plate. Finally, a ceramic plate had been placed on the stomach of the deceased inside the coffin in each of two burials at the 8th Street First African Baptist Church Cemetery. The first was of blue edge decorated pearlware, a widely popular earthenware of English manufacture, and the second was of hand-painted Chinese porcelain. The Old World and Native American archaeological literatures are replete with examples of the inclusion of ceramic vessels and other grave goods in burials, and the placement of grave goods is extremely common throughout much of West Africa. Ceramic grave goods have been documented in colonial period graves in Ghana, for example. Such offerings were apparently provided for use by the deceased in the afterlife, and perhaps also served as a form of social display of wealth and raw power. The recovery of ceramic vessels from historic period burials in North America is not, however, common at all, although a number of examples have been documented in the South and the Caribbean. Cabock and Wilson documented 5 examples of the recovery of ceramic vessels from 19th century African American burials in the South. 4 of these were saucers found either on the chest or pelvis of the deceased, and in the 5th case, a flower pot found at the foot of the coffin. A shallow red earthenware bowl was found at the grave of an African at the Newton Plantation Cemetery in Barbados, and a white salt-glazed stoneware saucer and feather-edged creamware plate, both of 18th century English manufacture, were recovered from 2 English graves in Jamaica. An ironstone plate was recovered from the grave of a poorly preserved female of indeterminate race at the 19th century Quaker Cemetery in Alexandria, Virginia. The purpose and meaning of these ceramics is particularly ambiguous. Several authors writing on rituals of death have reported that plates of salt were traditionally used in parts of Ireland and England to control odour and or bloating of the deceased. This practice is also reported in Appalachia in the 19th century. Fremer concluded that the inclusion of the ceramic vessels in the 2 Jamaican cases was likely due to oversight rather than the result of intentional act. However, he also noted that in isolated parts of Jamaica, it's traditional to place a dish containing a mixture of coffee and salt on the stomach of the deceased throughout the wake and burial. The author has been told by African Jamaicans that this practice and other uses of salt during a funeral are meant to keep the devil away. However, the practice does not seem to have been widespread, or at least not to have often resulted in the burial of the ceramic vessel. With the exception of the 8th Street First African Baptist Church Cemetery, there are no known examples of the recovery of plates from burial context anywhere in the northern United States or Canada. The author has, however, heard of a 19th century example from the United Kingdom that he's not been able to substantiate. It's possible that these plates were deliberately placed in the graves for use in the afterlife, or the plate last used by the deceased may have been buried in an effort to prevent the deceased's spirit from harming the living. In parts of the South and Africa, it was believed that the energy or essence of the dead was embodied in the objects last used. Barley's analysis of African pottery traditions asserts the importance of ceramic pots in Africa, deriving from concerns with non-material forces that can only act through localization in a material object such as a pot. These pots then serve to contain or direct the force. Pots are often ritually smashed in order to destroy these forces. Broken ceramic and glasswares are commonly found on the surface of African American cemetery sites. If the plates had been deliberately broken, that would lend support to the notion that their placement in the graves was to ground the energy of the deceased. However, excavation photographs indicate that they were probably broken in situ by the weight of earth pressing down on them. Style and performance. The practices described appear to reflect African-influenced creolized adaptations of European material culture, and even certain European folk practices as well. John Vlack, who documented the survival and maintenance of African traditions in a wide range of folk arts and crafts, noted that various art forms possess a cultural unity in their African heritage, and that stylistic consistency in design and the process of creation, or style and performance, appear to be major aspects of ethnic integrity of African American culture. While some artifacts represent the uninterrupted survival of African traditions, such as coiled grass baskets produced in the Carolina Low Country, others, such as quilts, incorporate African themes and meanings into a European object form. Leland Ferguson's analysis of Kolonoware pottery suggests a similar adaptation of European forms into an African craft tradition. African-American spirituality. Historian Sterling Stuckey observed that being on good terms with the spirits of one's ancestors was an overarching concern of enslaved Africans throughout the New World. Various songs, rhythms, movements, and belief in the curative powers of roots and the efficacy of a world of spirits and ancestors appear to have survived well into the 19th century and beyond, and these were combined in creative ways with the various evangelical denominations of Christianity to which Africans on the North American mainland were introduced. Enthusiastic singing, clapping, dancing, and even spirit possession were and remain common, even in the context of Christian liturgy. The concept of syncretism, the synthesis of religious forms, may be helpful here. Once a disparaging ethnocentric label for religious traditions that were seen as impure or inauthentic due to the incorporation of local ideas and practices, this concept is now recognized as a force that can support resistance to cultural dominance, provide links to a lost history, and or provide a means of establishing identity. Identity and meaning. Which brings the conversation back to identity. Individual and collective identities are critical aspects of human existence. The material world is in essence a canvas where objects are created, chosen, and arranged to create meaning and express values. Such social uses of the material world transcend essential functionalism. It is in the context of their ritual use that the meaning of the everyday objects considered here is found. The special, intersubjective, and collective nature of burial ritual is clearly an especially powerful context for archaeological analysis of the most mundane and innocuous objects.
Thank you.